The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Good morning, Jonathan. How's it going?
I am good. Look, as I'm getting older, right, as we are all getting older, aging gracefully in your case, not so much in mine, I'm finding it so much easier to sleep and I can't work it out.
That's interesting, yes, because most people need less sleep as they age. First, another number of hours you need, lessons as we get older for some strange reason. But you must have a very calm mind, have you, John? You get a good night's sleep at the moment, are you?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say a calm mind, but I just reached the point where I go, that's it, like, brain gone, good night. And let's put it this way, I'm no Maggie Thatcher, who famously used to survive on 3 hours a night.
She was, yeah. Now, she's interesting as what we call a short sleeper. So some people definitely get by on, say, 6 hours or less. The average, of course, is 7 to 8. As you probably know, most people need 8 hours. And if you get less sleep, of course, the next day you're groggy, your memory isn't as strong, say your cognitive powers are lessened, you know. So we know sleep is extremely important to keep us healthy. But they found some people, like Maggie Thatcher's probably a good example of getting away with a lot less sleep. And I guess that's why she was so busy, I suppose, because she probably got away with 4 or 5 hours a night.
Yeah, I can't imagine how productive I would be after 4 hours. I'm
unlikely,
guessing not very. Yeah, and power naps would be required.
Yeah, now that's true. I mean, they are called short sleepers. So they probably have power naps during the day. Keep them going. A little siesta in the afternoon or whatever and recharge up whatever it is, you know, and then that keeps them going as well.
Yeah, I know that the breakfast team are big fans of the old mid-afternoon nap because of the fact they have to get up early.
So early.
Which is understandable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's all down to our immune system
to
a certain degree.
Yeah, well, there's this recent research is really getting a handle on this, why some people need more sleep and less and so on. There's no doubt, though, one function of sleep is to help your immune system, which is because of my big interest. If you get a bad night's sleep, the next day your immune system is less active. That means less antibodies. And you may remember that antibodies were a big thing during COVID. But they're key things in the immune system, less things called cytokines, which my lab works on. So the overall immune system ramps down after a bad night's sleep. That may be the day you're sitting beside someone on the Lewis or whatever and they cough over you and then you get infected. You know, people often ask, why did I get infected? It could be because you had a bad night's sleep and your immune system is a bit less active. So a good night's sleep.
Or somebody hocked in your face on the Lewis, which is probably another reason why.
Yep.
I mean, sleep is vital, though. We need sleep because it's when our body allows the immune system to build. But it also allows the grey matter to rest a little bit.
It does. It's a mystery why we need sleep, why animals need sleep. That was a mystery for a long time. And then I suppose about 10 years ago or so ago now, they realised that when you're sleeping, your brain kind of washes itself. There's a strange thing happening. You slosh out all the toxins that build up during the day. Because during the day, your brain is buzzing. And it's a bit like a car engine. The exhaust fumes are building up. And at night, when you sleep, a thing called the glymphatics, great name, open up and slosh out all these things that built up during the day down to your liver. You know, in other words, you're cleaning your brain. It's a bit like the wash cycle. If you ever, before you go to bed, you put in your washing machine or whatever. It's a bit like that, and that's a really important function. And if you don't get enough sleep, then the prediction is that some of these things become damaging. And one big thing is on a risk of Alzheimer's, amazingly. And poor Maggie Thatcher herself, I think she ended up with Alzheimer's.
She did, yeah.
So they reckon that might be part of it. If insufficient sleep is a risk factor for that, probably because you're not cleaning your brain. Just day-to-day activity really generates these byproducts, and that seems to be a major function.
Now, of course, genetics, we are getting to grips with a lot more, and there could be a genetic reason for these short sleepers.
That's the beauty of it. Exactly, yeah. 4 separate genes have now been described. The first was in 2009, and it's called DEC2, DEC2. These genes often have impossible names, but if you carry a particular form of that one, you're a short sleeper. And they found it, Jonathan, in a mother and daughter, because it often runs in families, you know. And they found a mother and daughter who were short sleepers, less than 6 hours, and they found this DEC2 variant in those people, you know. And that was the very first gene back in 2009. And since then, there's been 3 more. So now we know there's at least 4 genes. And if you carry particular versions of it, that means you're a short sleeper. So it's seen as a real advance, I guess, in how sleep is regulated.
Now, there are phenomenal idiots who are on social media who tell us about their routines, about getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, having a poo, then going for a 6 kilometre run, then coming back, doing 2 hours work, then having another poo. You know, they document their entire morning, and it always involves, I only need 3 hours sleep a night, and I hate them.
Yeah.
But could I become one, Luke, if I try hard enough?
No. What these studies have shown is it looks like it's written in your genes. So in other words, you've got a set point that's genetic. And no matter what you do, you can't sort of get yourself to sleep less and get away with it kind of thing, you know. And people thought that might be the case. You might train yourself to get less sleep. But it turns out it's in your biology, so it seems very unlikely that you can change your habits. Now, because some people will drink coffee during the day. As a species, we're very good at keeping ourselves awake using various techniques, you know, things like caffeine is a big one, of course, you know. So you can do that kind of thing. But your natural sleep pattern is probably written in your genes, so you can't really do much about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely genetically disposed to needing a good night's sleep, yeah, personally. And long may that continue, that I can have it. You're just back from the States, where we were talking about Trump and tariffs and all that kind of thing earlier on. I know from speaking to friends who either work in the States or who have colleagues over there, it's an absolute state of chaos over there at the moment.
You would not believe it. I was at a big conference. Every American scientist is in bits, is the best way to describe it. Consternation is what this is causing. They've let go 10% of the scientific workforce, for example. Now, any organization, if you lose 10% of the people, that can't be seen as a good thing. Secondly, massive uncertainty. Will we get grants? What will the funding be like, you know? And so there's huge anxiety about this in America at the moment. And one very senior guy who I met from Harvard, actually, he said it's causing, people are being disincentivized now. So younger people might go, I'm not getting into that business if it's that uncertain. So it really is causing a huge amount of grief. The second thing is, of course, grants that us academics get, as you might know, we often get an overhead on the grant to cover things like lighting and so on, you know. That's going to be cut massively. So the universities are worried now that they won't have enough money to keep the lights on, kind of thing, which is another concern. So I'm not joking yet. It was all that was being, I was there for 3 days, right? It was all that was spoken about in the coffee breaks. I mean, they're really, really worried. So it's a really disturbing
but there's
time.
People's, like, okay, scientific impact aside, these are people's livelihoods. This is what they do.
Losing their jobs.
Yeah, they're losing their jobs. I was looking yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, but Elon Musk and his Doge, Department of Government Efficiency, he was trying to say before a cabinet meeting yesterday, oh, you know, sometimes we make mistakes. We accidentally cut the budget for Ebola prevention.
But we've
restored it.
Well, the big one was bird flu is a big concern of them in America. Bird flu, it's rampant, you know, and the price of eggs has gone up, as you may have seen, Jonathan, because they've been culling all the hens. The experts on bird flu were fired, right? And they said, oh, we better reappoint them quick, you know. So in other words, they are realising that they're firing the wrong people, you might say, you know. Now, mind you, other were offered early redundancy was fine, like any organisation, some people took it, you know. But it seems to be a random shotgun approach just to get rid of people, which seems
but
very
could,
strange.
Could there be, the impact here, could it be the equivalent of the flight of the Earls? Are we going to see a lot of scientific minds that have always worked in America moving to other countries now because that's where they feel they're going to make an impact?
Yeah, well, one scientist said to me, and a senior one, remember after the Second World War, many Europeans went to America. There was this sort of brain drain away from Europe into America, especially with the NASA and the space program and all those things. Maybe there'll be a reverse brain drain. In other words, America's in trouble now, so maybe American scientists will want to come to Europe, and certainly the European Union has spotted this, and they may even put on special programs to entice American scientists to come now. Or maybe Europeans have been there for 15 or 20 years now. It might be the time to say, oh God, I'm going to go back to Europe because this environment is very uncertain. So that may be a dividend, you might say. And there's sort of a signal going out. We want to support our American brothers and sisters in science because they are struggling at the moment. Now, again, you might say it'd be a bit unfair to poach them, but it wouldn't surprise me we'll see a shift from some great American scientists coming over to Europe because all they want to do is great science, remember. And they'll go wherever the funding is to get their ideas and fund them and all that kind of thing. You know, so if the funding happens to be more secure in Europe, they may well move. You never know.
It does feel a little bit like the fall of the Roman Empire and the beginning of the Dark Ages in some ways, doesn't it?
Well, there's no doubt these things needed reforming because they were big bureaucracies. So the scientists I was speaking to, we knew there was a change coming and to make it more lean, you know, and that kind of thing. So they knew it was kind of coming. They didn't expect it to be so brutal and so rapid. And what's really upsetting them is it does seem to be one guy driving it, Elon Musk, you know, and he wasn't elected, was he, you see? So they're a bit unhappy about this, the way it's being done in a way. So there was a need for reform, but not in such a brutal way as the view.
Okay, Luke O'Neill, pleasure as always. Do you have a favourite Gene Hackman film? People have been texting in this morning.
The French Connection. isn't it? Yeah. Wasn't that the best one about Popeye? Wasn't that the character he played there? So I'll never forget that. It was a superb.
Incredible. I was looking at it again this morning. A strange little pork pie hat he wore throughout the film. Great stuff. Luke, we'll talk to you again later on. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. The movie The Hoosiers, otherwise known as The Best Shot, was one of Gene Hackman's best ever, as mentioned by Larry Donnelly earlier. An excellent car chase, which included Dennis Hopper. And he and Dennis Hopper also won an Oscar first. Hackman was nominated for an Oscar for it. Fabulous movie. Recommend you watch it. I will. Gene Hackman's cameo in Young Frankenstein as the blind man was brilliant. One of the highlights of a classic Mel Brooks comedy. Mississippi Burning, says another listener. Absolutely brilliant. Very menacing and unforgiving. He was. Forgotten about that. And Anna agrees with Luke that The French Connection was his best movie. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.